This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
It's time.
It's time.
Time to get in the zone.
Time to get in the zone.
With the 49ers Web Zone.
This is the No Huddle Podcast.
With Al and Brian.
Web Zone, No Huddle Podcast, part of the Odyssey Network. I'm Al Sacco. Brian will be on the show a little bit later, but pretty excited because, you know, we like to have other content creators on the show. Anytime we can have somebody on that I've been following for a while and haven't had a chance to talk to, I'm excited. And we have from Chat Sports, he's hosted the 49ers Report, Chase Sr. on. Again, he's been doing a great job. If you haven't checked out his stuff, go on YouTube and check it out. He does just a phenomenal job covering this team. Chase, thanks for being here, man.
Al, I've been following you for a really long time, and I said before we got started, it's good to meet you virtually, and it's good to connect, chop it up, and talk some Niners here. I'm pumped up that I'm able to hop on this show, and when you reached out to me, I was like, yeah, let's do it. Let's talk.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know what took us so long, but, you know, we're here now, and we can talk Niners now, and I know that you just got back from the Combine. I know you were there and covering it. What was that experience like to be there and actually cover it in the stadium?
Yeah, it was incredible because I've been to the Super Bowl the last 2 years, and the Super Bowl is just a completely different, pressure-packed, hectic environment where there's so many people, there are media outlets from all across the world, and I'd say the setup of Radio Row is about 4x what it was for the NFL Scouting Combine, and because it's in the lead-up to the game, there's a lot of pressure, and it's a who's who of media figures there, from Colin Cowherd to Pat McAfee to Stephen A. Smith walking around to Bert Kreischer. It's a lot more of an entertainment type of event. And then I go to the Scouting Combine for the first time this year in Indianapolis. It's a completely different vibe. From the NFL standpoint, all of the coaches are much more relaxed because everybody is starting at 0-0 on the record, and there's newfound hope that they're going to be able to either turn things around in 2024 and this upcoming season, or they're going to be able to rebound from a heartbreaking loss, like let's say the Niners had in the Super Bowl. You're just looking ahead to the new year because the previous season is behind you, and Radio Row is a lot smaller, but it's almost like a networking job conference at the NFL Combine where media members, you have an opportunity to kind of chop it up in more of a smaller setting where you can have more in-depth conversations a little bit. There's not always a place to go, and it's just not involving the craziness that is the Super Bowl. So I liked how it was intimate, and it was really cool to be able to talk and interview to all these draft prospects because you're looking at some of these players on the podiums, and you're like, wow, a 40-yard dash potentially is going to make Xavier Worthy several more million dollars than maybe he was projected to get going into Combine week. If a defensive lineman was projected to go in the fourth round, but he runs a fast 40-yard dash, or a tight end was going to be a six-round pick, but then he runs a 4-5, he could be a top 100 guy. And it's crazy to talk with these athletes knowing the opportunity that they have both financially and in their football life to take that next step following their college career and to go into the big boy leagues of the NFL. It's a very, very cool experience.
When you were watching it, watching the workouts or just the buzz that you heard there, what position groups stood out in terms of guys coming into the draft, I should say?
this is such an incredibly deep wide receiver class. And because of that, I think there's going to be such good wide receiver talent on the board in the first, second, and third rounds that teams aren't going to be able to help themselves. And that includes San Francisco. And obviously, the future of Brandon Ayuk, the future of Deebo Samuel and Juwan Jennings is going to come into play here. But if they're thinking about trading Deebo, not being able to retain Ayuk because he's going to want north of $25 million, if they need a replacement, and I don't think that they're going to move off of Ayuk or Deebo, but if they need a replacement, this wide receiver class is so deep that they're going to be able to find a really, really quality player. And for other teams across the NFL, they might have more glaring needs, but how do you turn down an Xavier Worthy when he runs a 4-2-1? How do you not give into the temptation of drafting a Brian Thomas, who's big and ran fast, or in the second round, Xavier Leggett, who really broke out in 2023, who is like 6'2", 220 pounds, and he ran a low 4.4 40-yard dash. So wide receiver is really deep. And I think that this is something that's been developing over the last couple of years where it might get to a point where why are teams going to pay a Justin Jefferson $30 million per year?
100%.
When in the draft every single year, you're paying these wide receivers $5 million under their rookie contract for the next 4 or 5 years at a fraction of the price, yet you're still getting some really good production. And look at a team like Minnesota. They moved off of Stephon Diggs and got Justin Jefferson. What if they move off of Justin Jefferson knowing that Jordan Addison just had more than 1,000 yards this past year and a lot of touchdowns somewhere in that realm? So I think it could change the team building strategy at the wide receiver spot. Other position groups that are deep, we've been talking about the Niners offensive line for a long time on my show. I know you have as well. It's a huge need. I think the Niners have gotten exposed in the trenches the last 2 years in the biggest games. They got exposed by Dallas in the divisional round in 2022, then by Philadelphia in the NFC Championship game, then against Kansas City in the Super Bowl. If they're looking for an interior offensive lineman or an offensive tackle, some of these tackles specifically were built in a lab where you have some of these cats running 5 second 40-yard dashes at 330 pounds. They're so gifted. They're also really good scheme fits because a lot of them at the college level are running zone concepts. Kyle Shanahan likes to run a zone concept. So these tackles and these guards and these centers are required to get out in space on some of those pull blocks. And just imagine you're a DB who's weighing in at 180 pounds and you see a guy like Kingsley Suamata-Ia at a BYU who's 330 pounds. He ran a 5 second 40-yard dash and he's going to block you on a pull block. That's terrifying. So offensive line, wide receiver, very deep position groups.
Dude, you hit on so much in what you were just saying of the things that have been going through my head about the 49ers as we move forward here. And I think, Chase, I think this offseason is one like we haven't seen in a while. And it's so huge for them because, yeah, they're going to try to run it back for the most part. There may be a surprise. Maybe somebody gets moved. Who knows? For the most part, they're going to run it back with the guys that they have. At the same time, they have to retool for 2025 where some of these guys are ready to hit the ground running when they do move on from an Armstead, possibly a Deebo, a Hargrave and things and people like that. So the first thing I want to get into, you brought up a great point with the wide receivers. And I've been thinking about this too. I saw Mike Evans sign his deal. It was 2 years, $56 million, whatever it was. And I think the really elite guys are going to get paid. I think Justin Jefferson's going to get paid. I think Jamar Chase will get paid. I think Brandon Ayuk will get paid. I think these guys will get paid, whether it's by their team or someone else. But for the 49ers, there's no way in hell they're paying two wide receivers $50 million combined in 2025. So can they sign Ayuk now? You get a low cap hit for 2024. You pay Deebo the big money. And then you move forward maybe without Deebo in 2025. But you brought up a great point. Can you see the Niners maybe saying, all right, we're going to bring in two wide receivers in this draft, knowing Deebo is gone in 2025, and kind of get those guys up to speed and maybe take a wide receiver higher than we're expecting?
Yeah, and I talked about that idea on my show. And look, I know fans get bent out of shape by these conversations, but especially on my show, I try to have conversations that are going to inform people and conversations that are insightful, but are also thought-provoking, right? And conversations that front offices are realistically having. And the Niners are looking at their wide receiver room and all of this talent in the last couple of drafts, and they're like, is it team building malpractice to have two wide receivers who are combining to make $50 million? So I think a realistic possibility here is if the Niners go offensive tackle, let's say at 31, and by the way, Xavier Worthy at 31 would not shock me to have a burner and a vertical threat to not let him go to Kansas City at 31. Wouldn't shock me at all. But let's just say the Niners go offensive tackle at 31. And in the second round, they address wide receiver. And they bring in a player who maybe isn't going to be a high-end impact guy in year one, but this is all by design, as they have the foresight to look ahead and say, we're going to give Brandon Ayuk his contract extension. And to the casual fan who isn't going to look at the books, you might say, well, we're paying two wide receivers $50 million. No, because in reality, we're going to trade Deebo Samuel going into 2025. And then Brandon Ayuk's contract extension is going to kick in. And then we avoid having to pay two wide receivers $50 million. We let go of Deebo Samuel. Let's say we bring back Juwan Jennings on a multi-year deal. He's just not going to make all that much money. We're paying Ayuk. We have Juwan Jennings. And then that wide receiver in year two, he steps into the fold and he becomes the number two to Brandon Ayuk, who already is the Niners' number one. And then you avoid that dreaded scenario in which you're investing too much money at the wide receiver spot with two guys at, you know, $24, $25 million. Because lastly, before I throw it back to you, if you're Brandon Ayuk, you're saying, well, hold on. I'm a second team All-Pro. I'm a better pure wide receiver than Deebo. I'm treated as if I'm the number one wide receiver on this team. And by the way, I am. Deebo's making 24. Why should I not be making more than him? And I think that he has a case to be made at the negotiating table.
Yeah, and I always tell people on the show, too, you have to take off the red and gold colored glasses sometimes. And people get pissed at me, too, because I tend to be pretty honest and blunt with what I think. It's not that I don't like Deebo. Again, you're just looking at reality. They're probably having these conversations. He makes a ton of money. He doesn't do Tyreek Hill or Justin Jefferson production. You know, he's a different kind of player, but he's banged up. It's probably his last season. Unless they retool some stuff or whatever, it's probably last season. I know people get pissed when you say that sometimes, but it's reality, man. You brought up the offensive line. I think they need a tackle, too. They probably need two because Trent Williams, you know, maybe there's a year or two left, and they definitely need a right tackle and somebody to eventually take over for Williams. But Brock Purdy is their quarterback. And you kind of look at the way that the Saints built their team. They were very strong up the middle with Drew Brees, who was a smaller guy like Purdy is. And you brought up them. It's another thing I've been talking about forever is in the, last year in the playoffs, we've seen this team get pushed around on the offensive line. And there are a million plays, million reasons why they lost the Super Bowl, you know, countless, I should say, those two Super Bowls. But two plays that stick out to me, 2019, when Chris Jones got pushed, I think it was on Mike Pearson, knocks the ball down, interior offensive line. In this past, obviously, we know in overtime when Burford picks up the wrong guy, again, at the guard position. So that's very important for the Niners. But you have Aaron Banks, you have Jake Brendel, who's 33, but I don't know that he's going anywhere. And then that right guard position is a little iffy, I guess. Do you think they're going to address the interior? Or do you think this team just is like, ah, we can piece that together and we're better off addressing bookends?
Yeah, one thing I've seen is if they drop the tackle at 31, they move Colton McKivitz to right guard. And maybe he's better suited there because he just doesn't have the physicality or the quickness to play against some of the top-tier edge rushers in the NFL. I wouldn't be surprised if they brought back a John Feliciano at about $3 to $5 million per year. I thought that he was a really good bargain basement type of deal for San Francisco because he stepped in well for Aaron Banks. He then took over for Spencer Burford and also stepped in for him when he was injured. He also has center flexibility too. So that wouldn't surprise me either. But Graham Barton is a player out of Duke where if he falls to 31, he's just simply too good of a player to pass up on. And that's a player who has shorter arms. The Niners as an organization, they like tackles with longer arms. So they might look at him as a guard, but he can play right tackle. He played a lot of left tackle for Duke last year. He played center as well. And I think that positional versatility always helps you out as an offensive lineman, and it makes you more valuable because as a rookie, you want me to play center? Fine, I've done it. You want me to play left tackle? I can do that. Right tackle? Shoot, I can give it a go there. Graham Barton has a nasty streak to him, and in talking to him, I was just so impressed with how intelligent, well-spoken, leadership qualities, everything that he brings to the table, but him just being able to pancake guys and just be a relentless player. So if he falls to 31, I like him there, but why I think the Niners might go offensive tackle at 31 or offensive line in general, just all of the players that they held formal meetings with. And they're all very notable players. Javon Foster, Adam Mizzou, Christian Jones out of Texas. They met with him at the Senior Bowl. Talese Fuag out of Oregon State. He's not going to last until 31. That would require a trade up, but they checked in on him at the Senior Bowl. They had a formal meeting with Graham Barton, Kingsley Suamata-Ia out of BYU, formal meeting at the Combine. And then they had formals with Jordan Morgan out of Arizona, who can play tackle or guard. Amarius Mims out of Georgia, who is 6'7", 340, only 8 starts to his name, but he's just a freak athlete. J.C. Latham can play tackle or guard, and then Patrick Paul out of Houston. All of those players they had formal meetings with. So, again, it's a deep class to need offensive line help in and be able to draft a player that can step in right from the jump and help this offense out at a position group where they desperately need it.
The other position group I'm worried about is the defensive line. And you know Bosa is there. Hargrave's in his early 30s. Armstead's going into his 10th year, and those guys are in the last year of their deal. And you go beyond that, there's really nothing there. They didn't do a good job adjusting the opposite defensive end, opposite Bosa last year, and they tried to bring in Chase Young. That didn't really work out. They need help stopping the run. They need interior guys. Maybe they can bring Kinlaw back on, you know, short-term deal or low-money deal or something like that. How worried are you about this D-line and how much do you think they need to address it this offseason?
Yeah, they met with a lot of defensive linemen, both on the edge but along the interior too. And McKinley Jackson, I think, is a name to keep an eye out for from Texas A&M. He's really big, really stout, really physical. The Niners had a formal meeting with him. And they did their due diligence on defensive tackles. That is a position group that I'm a little bit concerned about. I think Javon Kinlaw might get a bag from another team, so he might walk in free agency. So already there, that hurts your defensive tackle depth. But after Javon Hargrave and Eric Armstead, you're right. Like, they don't have a lot of defensive tackle depth. And they could use an influx of youth talent there at that position, especially to help out in the run game. Like, they went from the number one overall rushing defense all the way to 26th. This past year. And I think a big reason for that is that Javon Hargrave, he's a really good pass rushing defensive tackle, but with Philadelphia, with Pittsburgh, he was not good against the run. Now, funny enough, he was good in the Super Bowl against the run, but he's just historically not been good against the run game as a defensive tackle. So I think you need to bring in some young players. I think the Niners, the last couple of years, they've kind of missed like the DJ Jones type of player.
Oh, yeah.
Who they could put behind an Eric Armstead on the interior, and he could push the pocket from a pass rush standpoint, or he could really push the pocket and make some plays happen against the run game as well.
Niners seem to have something up their sleeve every year in free agency too. Javon Hargrave last year, we saw Mooney Ward. They're not afraid to make a splash. They're not afraid to make a big trade, whatever it is. Lynch is very aggressive. Do you see anything maybe that we're not suspecting this year in free agency, or is it just, do the Niners just have too many cap issues to do anything with that?
No, they have cap space right now. You have the rollover coming from last year, and then with some contract restructures, like, they can free up a lot of dollars so that they can have between $90 and $100 million, and it's actually a pretty realistic path to doing that. And it's so funny how when I talk about these trade possibilities or free agent possibilities, people will be in the comment section saying they don't have cap space, it's clickbait. And it's like, well, hold on. Financial gymnastics are a thing. Parag does a really good job of managing the books. And look at how this Niners organization has operated both with in-house talent and contract extensions in consecutive years. George Kittle, Fred Warner, Deebo Samuel, Nick Bosa, soon to be Brandon Ayuk. Look at the splashes that they've made with Javon Hargrave. Nobody saw that coming. With Charvarius Mooney Ward, giving him $14 million per year. They've gone all in, understanding they're in this Super Bowl window. So if they make a big splash for a marquee player in free agency on the defensive side of the ball or at offensive line, it's not going to surprise me at all, because they understand they're so close and have such a talented roster with the quarterback on a rookie salary, they have to take advantage of it.
You know, one name I can't get out of my head, and I think about their defense coordinator search, how they contacted Bill Belichick and they, hey, let's go after Steve Spagnuolo and see what we can do. I can't get Chris Jones out of my head. I can't feel like, and I'm not saying he's going to come to the 49ers or they can swing it or whatever, but I just feel like they're having meetings behind closed doors saying, how can we make this happen? Is this a realist? Because that's how they approach things. Yeah. And I feel like this guy's out there. He's one of the best defensive players in the league. He's dominated you in two Super Bowls. I feel like knowing them, they're kind of like, how can we get this guy? Probably a pipe dream, but that's where my head's at right now.
Hey, I'll tell you this. I mean, I think for the last like 2-3 years, he's been the better defensive tackle between him and Aaron Donald. And that's my opinion. And I think that's backed up with by just looking at the tape, looking at the numbers, looking at how he's played in some of the biggest games. He is so special where he has like the quickness of Reggie White, but then the physicality of a Warren Sapp all from the interior. And you're so right, in Super Bowl 54 and in Super Bowl 58. Like, he took over the game against San Francisco. I don't know how they'd be able to make it happen with both Armstead and Hargrave making a lot of money. They'd probably have to find a trade partner for Armstead and a team willing to take on that deal. They'd have to pull off some financial maneuverings in order to free up some money elsewhere. But, you know, right now the reports are that the Kansas City Chiefs are willing to give him about $25 million per year. Other teams are lining up, the Brinks truck, offering him about $30 million per year. And if he can get that money elsewhere, look, he's got his rings. I think that he might leave, and he's got 3 rings now. So he's accomplished everything. Now it's trying to kind of cash in on that final contract.
And then last question before we get you out of here. I was just curious on your thoughts on the DC situation, the Nick Sorensen, Brandon Staley. What did you think about how that all played out?
Yeah, I was kind of the leader of the call Bill Belichick movement. As soon as I saw that report, or as soon as I saw Kyle Shanahan kind of give a lukewarm answer for Wilkes' return in 2024, I'm like, look, if Kyle Shanahan's thinking about firing Steve Wilkes and you want to go all in after you've kind of choked away these two Super Bowls and you want to right the ship and win that 6th ring for this organization, call Bill Belichick. Like, he's on the unemployment line, one of the best defensive minds ever. He's got a malleable defensive mind where he's adaptable to a system that they want to run. I would have at least given him a call. And there were reports that Kyle Shanahan did give him a call. Bill Belichick wants to do TV, and he's going to look at a coaching job for the 2025 cycle. So outside of that, I would have called Mike Vrabel. I think that he's a terrific defensive mind. He might be in that same category of Belichick where he wants to just be a head coach in this league. I totally understand that. Everything that I was kind of hearing at the combine was, if it's internal, it's probably going to be Nick Sorensen. And I talked about that on my show. It's the least sexy hire of anything they could have done. But I see why they did it. Scheme familiarity. Players respect him. They want to get back to the roots of running that Pete Carroll system. He came up coaching under Pete Carroll. And then you bring in Brandon Staley to just kind of help him out a little bit as a guy who's a creative defensive mind and has experience as a coordinator. So it's not going to move the needle with fans. It's not going to bring the juice even that like Robert Saleh or D'Amico Ryans did, but to Kyle Shanahan's credit, he's done a hell of a job of developing coaches in this league, and Sorensen's looked at as the next guy in that path. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's definitely earned the benefit of the doubt. All right, Chase, we appreciate the time, man. Tell everybody where they can find you.
Yeah, so I'm on X and Instagram at Chase_Senior. I put out a lot of short form content there. And then you can find the 49ers Report on YouTube. We have 132,000 subscribers, largest independently run Niners channel on YouTube from a news standpoint, covering the team every day. And as I noted a little bit earlier, really try to give the fans and the people who watch our content the most informative, entertaining, and insightful content out there that's very thought provoking, creative. And we, of course, like to have a lot of fun on the show as well.
Appreciate you, man. Thanks so much for the time.
Of course. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks. All right. We are going to take a break, and then we are going to bring Brian on. We are going to talk about some free agency moves the Niners might make and maybe what we can expect.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Thanks again to Chase for coming on. And we are bringing in the co-host, the other half of the Auto Podcast. He's home alone. Brian Reddick. Brian,
I'm getting my Macaulay Culkin on right now.
Brian's family is gone, and Brian is by himself, and God knows what he's doing. God
doesn't know what to do with himself. It's It's a weird experience. I told my wife, I was like, I think this is the longest I will have been by myself in like 15 years. So, yeah, it's a weird experience, but, you know, I'm not the only one who is home alone. There are quite a few people who have been cut today from NFL teams that, I think it's going to make for a wild free agency.
And I was a little bit like, I'm not sure how this free agent period is going to go. A lot of guys getting tagged and, you know, some of the bigger names. But now, yeah, there's been people getting cut. Tre'Davious White is a guy. He's had a lot of serious injuries. But, you know, as somebody who pays attention to the Bills, when he's on, he's really good. Now, he hurt his knee and then he came back a little slow. And then he looked like he was himself again. And then he got hurt again. So I don't know. But he's a name that I looked at. Oh, I wonder. But you know what? I just said this to Chase. We know what the Niners need, and I know how the Niners are. They're big game hunters. They are. John Lynch is aggressive. Yeah. I just keep thinking, Brian, they're somewhere in a room, and this conversation has at least happened. Can we get Chris Jones? What do we need to do to get Chris Jones? This guy has beaten us in huge part of why we've lost two Super Bowls. Can we get him? Does it make sense? Do we have to move somebody? And I think there's too many moving pieces. I think the money is too much, and I don't think there's a way that it can happen. But I just feel the team that will call Bill Belichick and pick up a phone in 2017 and ask if Tom Brady's available and do things like that feel like they're at least having these conversations.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Because, again, like we said, when it happened, we said it, I believe, last episode, the Javon Hargrave signing was not on anyone's radar. That was a total surprise to everyone, whether it be beat reporters, national reporters, fans, whatever. Nobody had Javon Hargrave on the bingo card for the 49ers last offseason. So, like you, I'm not ever going to say no to anything because they've shown us that they can figure out how to make things happen. Do I find that to be likely? No, but the other name, the other huge name that I think, again, I mean, maybe not on the level of Chris Jones, but not far off, is Brian Burns from Carolina.
I thought you were going Danielle Hunter, but yeah, Burns is interesting too.
Yeah. But I mean, Danielle Hunter, but I am, my biggest fear is that, again, they do not address the offensive line. Like, they feel like they can get by with that offensive line. And
oh, the interior, I'm fully prepared for that. I'm fully prepared for Feliciano, Brendel, and Banks to run it back.
I don't even mean the interior. I just mean in general. You know, I don't know. Because if you go that route, right, you go big game hunting on the defensive side, it really pigeonholes you into finding offensive line upgrades in the draft, which you don't always want to be in the position to draft for need versus, you know, best player available. But if the 49ers go into the NFL draft in April without an answer at either right tackle or right guard, like, they've put themselves in a position where they have to address that at 31. I don't know how else you address it, because there is, to me, the big fish prize for me is on the offensive side of the ball. And that's Mike Nwenu, the tackle who was let go by the New England Patriots. You know, I think if you could sign Nwenu to play right tackle, that gives you the freedom to possibly kick Colton McKivitz inside to right guard. And then in the draft, you draft whatever edge player is available to you at 31, or you trade up a little bit if that's how you need to get a guy that you target, or maybe even trade back a little bit, right, to where some of those guys may still be available. But you allow yourself to go cheap edge route because you addressed your glaring hole on the offensive line at right tackle, and also possibly upgraded by kicking McKivitz inside. Maybe he is a better fit for guard, or you can still do that in like the second round with Christian Haynes from Connecticut, or Zach Frazier, the center from West Virginia. So I think if they were to sign Nwenu, I think it gives them more flexibility in the draft and flexibility in the offseason than if they go into the draft without having addressed the offensive line yet.
You said Burns, though. Do you think, like, because they need two ones to get him, right? Isn't that, I didn't even see which kind of franchise tag they put on him, though.
It's not the exclusive. I don't think anybody puts the exclusive on because that's the most expensive. So I believe it's the non-exclusive. But I can't, I think it might be two. But that's the thing is like, those are the kind of moves where you're like, oh, like, I didn't think they'd do mm-hmm. that. Right. And then right. you're like, oh, okay, that makes sense. So that's more what I mean. Because he is technically available, even though he is franchised.
Yeah. And Wanu is a guy, when I see the name, I'm like, yeah, that's a fit. That is a huge fit. Cause like you said, he plays right tackle. You can kick McKibbitz inside or just address right guard, however the hell you want to, and mm-hmm. use McKibbitz as your swing. But I just don't know, are they going to invest that kind of money in him? That's where I am. I know that they can move things around to go big fish hunting. I'm just curious if they're going to do it. And if they do, like you said, how are they going to prioritize? Because there are so many needs. There are mm-hmm. a lot. You yeah. needed defensive ends, plural. You need defensive mm-hmm. tackles, plural. Jason and I talked about how good this wide receiver class is. And I guess this is where I want to go with this. I don't want them to be in a position in this draft where they have to take a player, like you said.
Right.
So they go in, they don't adjust the offensive line in free agency. They go into the draft with, dude, okay, we got to take this right. tackle, or we got to right. take this offensive lineman. When you may have this phenomenal receiver class, you may have a receiver or two who are sitting there where you're like, all right, Debo's gone in 2025. This dude's a stud. You bring him in, you know, get him acclimated to the offense 2024, and then you hit the ground running in 2025. I want them to have those options. Mm-hmm. I want them to go into it and say, okay, we need defensive ends. We need defensive tackles. We need another corner. We need wide receivers. We need somebody to eventually take over for George Kittle. We need offensive linemen. They need all these things. And I want them to be in a position, because they have so many needs, that they can just, boom, best player available. Not draft for need, but yeah. draft because this guy is going to be a stud for us going down the line. So that's kind of where I am. That's why I'm just so fascinated to see what's going to happen in the next week or so. And then up into the draft, because this team is, whether people want to believe it or not, they're going to run back what they can this year. And 2025 is going to look a lot different. In the way 2025, the way that year is going to look, we're going to start to see it now, because they're going to start preparing yeah. for that year now with some of the moves that they make.
Well, and I think, you know, I think one of the things that we need to look for as well is some early extensions for players that are currently on the team. You know, mm-hmm. I had mentioned a couple weeks ago one way that I think would be smart for them to free up money this season would be to extend Mooney Ward, right? Which, you know, you extend him another 2 or 3 years, and then that allows you to convert some of his base salary this year into signing bonus. And now all of a sudden his cap hit, you know, you can save probably, I don't know, $10 million or so just with that move alone. But then you also look at things like, all right, well, maybe you could extend D'Amador Lenore. Now that might not be as valuable simply because Lenore's still on a rookie deal. And it's going to be hard because he was like a fifth round pick. So I don't think that you're going to be able to do a lot to, you know, to lower his cap hit. So maybe you wait on that one. You know, do you extend Ayuk early? So you lower Ayuk's cap hit, right? Do you extend Fred Warner?
Huh? I think Lenore's a free agent after next year, isn't he?
Yeah, he's after next year. This was his third year.
Okay. Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay,
they could negotiate because this is his third year. You have to wait for them to play through. It's the same with Brock, right? Like they can renegotiate with Brock after his third season. So this was Lenore's third season. So next season is his last.
Yeah. After this year, the whole secondary, like, are free agents.
Yeah. Yeah.
Funga, Lenore, 100%. They have to make decisions there, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, and again, do you extend Ayuk early to get some cap room this year? There's already been talk. Are they going to extend Fred Warner a couple years again, just to lower cap hit? So there's a lot of, I think there's a lot of moving parts that need to happen soon for them to be players when free agency starts next week. Now, again, you don't have to be under the salary cap until a specific time. So even if they do go big game hunting, they still will have time to move things around to be able to fit the contract that they, you know, that they offer or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I just feel like again, if this is a last ride, you have to be aggressive. You have to be. And I think there are ways to be cautiously aggressive and not catastrophically aggressive. But desperation is going to rear its head sooner rather than later. And I would imagine after what they went through in Vegas, the desperation is ratcheted up just a bit.
And I just wonder again, like, Bryce Huff is a name that I kind of have been looking at, but I think he's going to maybe get paid more money than he's just screams one of those free agent guys to me that gets overpaid. Now his numbers are phenomenal in terms of his pass rush per snap, but the Jets only used him as a pass rush specialist.
Right.
So is there, did they not trust him to play more than that? Did they think he was going to get exposed? So how much do you want to pay for somebody like that? That may just be situational.
Right.
Now in free agency, he's going to get paid. So do the 49ers, would they overpay for somebody like that? But he comes from the Jets system, you know, with Robert Saleh. I think he'd be a good fit. I just don't know if that's going to be somewhere where they would go or what they would do. Usually I look at guys and I'm like, yeah, I think that's a fit or that's a fit. I really don't know this year. Mm-hmm. I'm really looking at the crop and I'm like, I don't know where this team is going to go. I don't know what they're going to do, especially because in previous years, they maybe needed one or two things. And you could say, all right, well, they needed a corner. So you go after Mooney Ward. And they make a splash with Hargrave because, you know, you need another interior rusher type thing. This year they have a lot of needs. So I don't know what's going to happen. I can't wait, but where they're going to go. If I had names where I'm like, yeah, I got this guy circled and that guy circled. I just don't right now. Mm-hmm. I just don't. And you do think that they're going to make a splash because they normally do. And I agree. Mike and Wenu, I'm probably saying his name wrong. Cause I say all the name.
That's it.
Wrong.
Yeah.
And what? He's a terrific guard as well. So right. he's a really good tackle. He
right.
can play guard. So you get the flexibility with him. He can come in and start at right tackle right away. I think it's mm-hmm. a phenomenal signing for them. I just don't know if they're going to allocate their funds. I know they do a left tackle, but are they going to allocate their funds to that kind of position? I'm just not sure. But you brought up the name in a couple of times and I kind of went to school on him and I was like, yeah, holy shit. That's a perfect fit for them if, you know, they're willing to do that.
Yeah, and you know, and not only that, but the other thing that Nwenu allows you to do is if one of those tackles that you really like falls, you can still draft them with an eye towards, okay, now we've got a guy that can replace Trent Williams. We'll throw him on the right side. Mm-hmm. We'll put Mike at right guard, right? And then now you've significantly upgraded your offensive line. So even if they sign Mike and Wenu, it doesn't prohibit them from using 31 on a guy like a Jordan Morgan or Suamaitai from BYU or some of the guy, Tyler Guyton. Those are the guys that tend to kind of get clumped in that end of the first round kind of cohort. But the other thing that you brought up with this wide receiver class is if it is as incredible as we think it is, and that ends up forcing guys into the first round that we didn't initially probably think, that also pushes guys down towards the back end of the first round, which bodes well for the 49ers as well. So again, regardless of if it's a bumper receiver class and the 49ers dip their toes in it, it's still a benefit to the 49ers because that isn't a need for them, but it will push players down that will address needs that they do have. So, mm-hmm. you know, I think that's kind of best case scenario for the 49ers is, hey, if there's this run on, you know, seven or eight wide receivers go in the first round, which is not out of the question. Again, that pushes edges and tackles and, you know, and needs that the 49ers have, it pushes it to them. So again, just an excellent benefit for this wide receiver class.
So if what happens with the wide receiver group, if what I think happens where a lot of these guys, because this class is so deep, they're not going to get contracts. They may get 1-year deals type mm-hmm. thing. Because, and I want the Niners, again, I just said this to Chase. I want the 49ers to take two receivers here with eyes on 2025, somewhere in there. Take one mm-hmm. high. I don't care. But it's just too good of a class to miss out on this to me. But what you can see, somebody like Gabe Davis from Buffalo.
Yeah.
Who, you know, you've seen him in the playoffs. He'll have like 230 yards, but then he'll disappear for six games and then he'll have 100 yards. But he's a downfield guy. He's a speed guy.
He needs a specific role. I think yes. What Buffalo asked him to do last year was too much for him. So if you have a niche role for him, which is like, hey, we just need you to take the top off the defense, I think he would benefit from that for sure.
Darnell Mooney is another guy from the Bears who speed guy. Again, just give him a role, 1 year deal, incentive deal, one year, whatever, $3 million, give him some incentives. Just run downfield, take the top off the defense. I wonder if the Niners could maybe bring in a guy like that for a year, draft who they need to draft, and then move forward with those guys later. And you just have the 1 year deal with Davis and Mooney, and then you're done if you need to be. Right. But I feel like because of the way the market is, those guys may be able to be had at a lower price. And those are people that I'd like to see them go out and get. But we'll see. I think they need speed. I don't know if the Niners think
agreed.
Speed. So
I think Kyle Shanahan, misses speed. You know, I think
Taylor Gabriel type thing.
Well, not only that, but again, you know, you look at when did they have speed? They had speed like at the beginning of Shanahan's tenure, right? Into 2019. Mm-hmm. And then they saw who Jimmy Garoppolo was and went, well, we're wasting the speed. Like, why? What's the point of having this? If, you know what I mean? Hurt. Right. No, but like, yeah. I'm being a bit of a smart ass, but I'm not. Like, I genuinely think like if you track when the speed kind of went away from this team, it was after 2019. And then now Shanahan's like, well, now I got a guy I know can deliver the ball down the field. So maybe we start to, again, evolve back towards some of what I was doing in Atlanta when I had a phenomenal X, Brandon Ayuk, a reliable Z, Debo Samuel, and then I had Taylor Gabriel, who I'd throw in every once in a while and just take the top off the defense. And, you know, we talked about it. Do you start to build this offense more around a passing offense with Brock Purdy than a run first offense, even if you have Christian McCaffrey, and you start looking at guys that are maybe slightly better pass protectors and adequate run blockers rather than mauling run blockers who are adequate pass protectors. Your quarterback is short and he needs time in the pocket. Like, you got to start thinking about that and changing some things a little bit. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see if we see a shift in philosophy as well. One of those being, do they target a guy that, you know, can take the top off the defense?
Yeah, it is really interesting to see if they're going to start to build around Brock or kind of just build around Shanahan's offense, if that makes sense. You know, if Shanahan's still going to kind of just put his pieces in, or maybe they say we have a quarterback with a certain skill set.
Right.
Do we want to start surrounding guys to benefit Brock as opposed to, you know, just run my system type thing? I don't know. Again, it's just so intriguing to me how they're going to do this. I almost feel like, and this is going to sound ridiculous, but I almost feel like they're rebuilding, but they're not
a little bit
close to rebuilding. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, this is still,
yeah, no, I get it.
But I really feel like there's a retooling going on.
There it is. And it's retooling, not rebuilding. Right. Yeah.
And to still be able to do that while you're going into 2024 as a Super Bowl contender, you will be, and you're still going to, again, I think some really significant changes in 2025. It shows you how good they've been to get people to be able to transition that while these guys are aging. What a good job this team has done and everything else. So, you know, we nitpick or whatever, but, you know, overall, these guys have done a phenomenal job. Lynch and 100%. Shannon and all their lieutenants putting this roster together. So we'll see. But now I'm thinking, now I got this receiver stuff in my head. But again, I wonder if I'm just thinking about receivers more than the team is.
Well, hey, Monday, it's the start of legal tampering. We will get maybe some answers, probably at least one answer, if pattern serves the next time we talk.
Yeah, and we'll play next week by ear, so we'll see kind of what happens on Monday. If nothing happens, maybe we'll wait and see. But, you know, we'll definitely do our two shows next week. It'll just be, we'll kind of play it by ear, what happens with free agency and what and stuff like that.
Yep.
But, yeah. But, guys, listen, again, huge off season, and it really begins on Monday. Can't wait. We'll see you later.
Later.
Niners on three! 1, 2, 3! Niners!
Yeah. 2400 Sports is an Odyssey company.